Srila Prabhupada Ki Sri Bhakti Jai Bhava Ki Karantaraj Srila Bhagavatam Ki Giriraj Maharaj Nitai Goprema.
We'll
talk after class. Still a bit. Maybe after class, some of the men can move to these screens, these divider things.
You can hear
these things. Wish, can you just point to that? Yeah, those things there. Can some of the men after class just take them and put them in the dump master at the back of the car park after class? Just put them there because I spoke to Prabhu, and they have no purpose. We don't use them for anything. They've just been sitting there for years, and they're just actually taking up space. Sorry. If anyone can, please just take them. Or if you want to take them home, it's a gift from the course. Okay, some devotees said that, did everyone have the open book presentation topics for this section? This section, chapters, what are you up to? 8 to 11, Dhruva Maharaj's pastimes. Anyone need it? You didn't get it?
I don't know.
The open book topics. You didn't get it?
Yeah.
Anyone didn't get it?
Oh, is it
same one? No, it's the same one.
Okay.
Mahatma, you should have it. You should have it.
Yeah, but you're right.
Yes. Okay. Does anyone need it? Everyone's got it? Okay.
I have many topics too.
Okay. Rasa hasn't? Okay. I'll have to keep one. Do you need that one? Mata, do you need that one? Mahatma's got it, so then you can just photocopy it. Oh, that's it. Everyone should have. What about the key memory verses for this section? Everyone have them? Does anyone know what they are right now? Anyone can tell me what they are right now? Just in case anyone needs them. Brahma Samhita, 532. Brahma Samhita, 5.35.
4.8.33
and 4.8.34. Okay, so Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 8th chapter, verses 33 and 34. So everyone write that down. If you don't know it already, most of you should already know, but if you don't know the key memory verses for this section, 4th canto, 8th chapter, verses 33 and 34, and Brahma Samhita, verses 32 and 35. Is that correct? That's correct. Everyone's got that? Okay.
Good.
Okay. So what did we discuss in the previous class? Last week. Vaishnava does not hold animosity for anyone. What's that in relation to?
Even if mistreated, Vaishnava doesn't have animosity. I think the relation to how Dhruva Maharaj treated his.
Yeah. And also his mother Suniti, how she reacted to Suriji. She took them out to the.
Yeah. Okay. Can you close that door properly?
Any other points?
when another Suniti saw Guru Maharaj, she nearly gave him a shake.
She was so happy. Any other points?
It's the nature of the Vaishnava to forgive. So Suniti took Suniti as well while we are going on a palanquin to receive Guru Maharaj.
Yeah.
So she has forgotten awfully what has happened to her and her son in law.
Yeah.
And to forgive requires courage.
Any other points?
The devotee pleases Krishna, everyone becomes pleased. Because Krishna is the abode of all good qualities, Vishuddha Sattva.
Last point. Anything else?
What do you think? We have to develop qualities mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and that is why we are left in terms of Suniti, you know, pardoning Suniti. This will be tested especially when we are provoked by the devotees or not, whether we are really implemented whatever we are learning in the
Good. Last part.
While Guru Maharaj was doing the austerities, Suniti also was praying to the Lord all the time. Simultaneously.
So what you think lecture by Gaur Prabhu on the topic, and he said it's not mentioned anywhere in the topic that Suniti was a Mahabhagavat or a learned spiritually advanced lady. She was just simple household queen, but she was very rich in her character. So that's what you have to emphasize. You should give high values on the character and the basic knowledge, not the other way around. So we don't have to worry about too much education without having any values. And that's the bigger cause of disturbance in the world today. People who are learned and they just don't have any values and they drive the things according to their own whims and fancies.
Yeah, the culmination of knowledge is to develop character. Like that. Just like in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that the first item of knowledge is humility. So then if you don't have humility, which means character, then what is the purpose of the study? That means the study is fruitless. So if we do all this study, if we study the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, and the Bhakti Shastras, but we don't develop positive Vaishnava qualities, then it is fruitless. Any other points?
Humility is not thinking less of self, thinking less about others.
So chapter 9 is called? Guru Maharaj Return Song. So, we see in the beginning of the chapter that Guru Maharaj, he has darshan, shakshat darshan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the goal of Krishna consciousness, the prayojana. Prayojana means the ultimate goal. That is to have a relationship with Krishna face to face, to see Krishna. So she is able to see Krishna. So he is able to see Krishna. So that is his perfect quality. Then he offers prayers to Krishna. He desires to offer prayers, but because he has no capacity to offer prayers, because he is only 5 years old, then he is touched by the Lord on his forehead, and the Lord gives him the potency or the ability to offer prayers to the Lord. So then he offers very wonderful prayers, which are far beyond what any of us could compose or recite, and he's only 5 years old. So this is the Lord's mercy. Then the Lord disappears, and Dhruva Maharaj realizes that he has wasted his time, because he laments that he has put in so much effort to see the Lord, but he was materially motivated. But when he saw the Lord, all of that material motivation disappeared from his heart. All of that desire to acquire something material, that left him. And that's what should happen to us as we become more Krishna conscious. As we advance as devotees, then we should become less materially interested. And we should become more fed up with the material world. We should lose our attraction to Maya, to the material energy. So Dhruva Maharaj lamented in that way, and then he had to rule the earth for 36,000 years. So then he returned back to the capital of Maharaj Uttanapad, his father. Now when Uttanapad heard he was coming, they all went out to receive him. And there is a description of the wonderful quality of his mother, Suniti, who was a wonderful devotee, how she did not hold any grudge against Suruchi. So this is the quality of a devotee. We have to see also this coming into our personality or our character. We have to develop the quality that we become forgiving even to our enemies. That we become well disposed even to our enemies. That we do not feel any grudge in our heart towards even our enemies. That we feel a positive attitude towards even those who are inimical towards us. That is a sign of advancement and detachment in Krishna consciousness when one comes to a very elevated platform. Then we hear a description of the capital of Maharaj Uttanapad, and tonight we'll finish the chapter, verses 62 to 67. And tonight is a very wonderful description by Srila Prabhupada in his purports of the wonderful qualities of the Vedic culture. So this is the Srimad Bhagavatam shows us a culture which is God-given. It is called Bhagavad Dharma. This is the culture of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Sanatana Dharma. Now, in this material world, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says there is nothing lacking. There is nothing missing in this material world. The only thing which is missing is Krishna consciousness. When you have Krishna consciousness, everything is perfect in this material world. And when you finish your time in this material world, you will transcend, you'll go back to Krishna's abode. Prabhupada actually writes this in the final purport tonight. So, if we follow the Vedic culture, which is presented in the Srimad Bhagavatam, this is the most ideal way and the most auspicious way to organize human society and to live in this material world. Because Prabhupada points out it's been done for millions of years. The description we're hearing about here is from millions of years ago. And it was a perfect culture. You can see how wonderful the description is of the capital of Maharaj Uttanapad. And how auspicious life becomes when people are God-conscious in this material world. Prabhupada writes in his purports in this section tonight, he says if the whole world becomes God-conscious, then we don't have any problems. We only have problems then if people are not God-conscious, they're not Krishna-conscious. Okay. So we'll read through this section. Any points?
Can I ask a clarification for you?
Yes.
Suniti is another great devotee. She could forgive Suruchi because it's like a Hollywood movie. Everything turned out to be positive and happy. The Dhruva Maharaj has come back with darshan of the Lord and then all the blessings. But if there was a reverse on that side, it was not a happy ending, would Suniti be still forgiving Suruchi? Do we have any examples where such a thing has happened that because of somebody, the devotee's son or daughter has become miserable and then still has not been?
Yeah, in the first canto, in Draupadi, we see that she forgives Ashwatthama even though he killed the five sons.
Yeah.
That's how powerful the Vaishnava is.
Even not Shiva forgives Lakshmana even though his wife was killed because of Lakshmana.
Yeah, Shiva did not hold any grudge. That's true. Is the position of a Maha Bhagavat or a perfect devotee. Okay. So, the palace of the king was surrounded by walls made of marble with many engravings made of valuable jewels like sapphires which depicted beautiful women with shining jewel lamps in their hands.
The description of King Upanishad's palace depicts the state of affairs many hundreds and thousands of years ago, long before Srimad Bhagavatam was compiled. Since it is described that Maharaj ruled for 36,000 years, he must have lived in the Satya Yuga, when people lived for 100,000 years. The life durations in the four yugas are also mentioned in the Vedic literature. In the Satya Yuga, people used to live for 100,000 years. In the Treta Yuga, people lived for 10,000 years. In Dwapara Yuga, they lived for 1,000 years. And in this age, Kali Yuga, people may live up to 100 years. With the progressive advance of each new yuga, the duration of human life is reduced by 90%, from 100,000 to 10,000, from 10,000 to 1,000, and from 1,000 to 100.
Okay. What are the points so far?
In the 11th canto that with every passing day the duration of life will come to Satya Anandhyam Dhanam Satyam Shocham Shamadaya Kaliyana Balina Raja Kamshati Ayyam. By the passage of time the Ayu Balam is pretty, everything is worth. Ayu is age, Balam is strength and safety is safe, everything will diminish. So is fruitful and so many other things.
Any other points?
Yes, at the end of Kali Yuga, it is not 100, right?
At the end of Kali Yuga, 427,000 years from now. Yeah, it describes in the 12th canto what it's like then. People only grow 2 or 3 feet high.
Yeah.
They are black and shriveled. You cannot see the sun anymore. There are no more trees. There's no more rain.
Yeah.
Everyone is cannibal. Like that, so it's very, that's how it becomes.
Life comes to 20 years.
Yeah, like that, something like that. Oh yeah, it says something. It says when you're 20 or 30, you're an old man or something. So, in the material world, everything diminishes under the influence of kala, or time. Because time destroys everything within the material world. Now, because the nature of the material world is that when you associate with the modes of material nature, you develop material desires. And by developing material desires, you develop if you associate with materialistic people, you develop a proclivity or a propensity to commit sinful activities, or pap. And when you commit pap, or sinful activity, then everything auspicious becomes diminished. So that's what the problem with the material world is, that the living entities in the material world, they become more and more materialistic and more desirous of sense gratification and performing sinful activities. So because they perform more and more sinful activities, then what is the result? The result is that everything becomes less and less auspicious. Everything deteriorates over time. So we see, well, this is what takes place. Satya Yuga things are very perfect. Treta Yuga things become less perfect. Dwapara Yuga and then Kali Yuga, everything diminishes gradually. Now that is happening because the living entities are performing sinful activities. So over time we see that even the duration of life is shortened by sinful activities. Just like for the last week or so, Veda Priya Mataji was in hospital and she came back today. Because she had her skin graft on her foot. So I went in there a few times to see her in the hospital. And you see how much suffering there is. How people are suffering so much. Old people, and she was in the burns ward, where people have burns on their bodies and, you know, a lot of suffering, a lot of problems. And this is all happening because of sinful activity. Your life is shortened. Things become inauspicious. And you see that the more people perform sinful activity, the more their vitality, their prana, their ojas, their tejas, these qualities which are given in the Ayurveda. Ayur means life. So your life is shortened, as Jagannath Prabhu was pointing out. Your life becomes shortened by sinful activity. The more sinful activity you perform, then the less you diminish your duration of life, your good fortune, your pious qualities, everything is destroyed. So the nature of the material world is that the living entities become more and more sinful over time, and then deteriorates and deteriorates and deteriorates, and then it comes to the end of Kali Yuga. And then the only thing which can reverse it is when Kalki comes himself. The Lord himself comes on his horse, Devadatta, and he rides across the earth and he just kills everyone. Whoever's left, there's not so many people left, he just kills everyone. And as he rides, then the earth becomes replenished as he rides across the earth, and then everything turns into Satya Yuga once again. Everything becomes auspicious and in the mode of goodness, Sattva Guna, and then it all starts again. And then gradually deteriorates again and again and again. This is the nature of the material world. So we must be very careful to avoid materialistic association. Asatsanga tyag, evaishnav acha. Mahaprabhu says that one must avoid materialistic association because it will develop within you materialistic and sinful desires. You must be very careful. Maybe not back to Godhead, but maybe they get liberated, some benefit is there. They may even go back to Godhead, that's also possible. But if you're killed by the Lord himself, then you get great benefit. Means all your karma is purified, at least that will happen. Or it may even be more exalted than that. Or they may get Suyuja Mukti or something. Any other points?
Some of the challenges
we have
today is Kalki Jayanti.
Today is? Really? Kalki Jayanti.
That makes it there. Kalki Avatar has been there for so many times.
This is the day he will appear.
He appeared
in the last Kali Yuga.
I heard in one class by Gauram Prabhu that there are a lot of Kalki avatars in India. Many people are claiming that they are Kalki Bhavan. That's why what happened, the media one day what they did was they sent a secret invitation to all these Kalki avatars. And they called them for a program saying that please come and talk. And they didn't tell that they are inviting the other Kalki avatars. So all the Kalki avatars are banned up on the studio. And they were telling us in Bangalore. And then they said, now you understand who is the real Kalki avatar. And there was total chaos and everyone enjoyed the program.
Any other points?
If you go to some of the shops, especially Asian grade grocery shops, you find Kalki and Mr. Kalki.
Kalki and who?
Mr. Kalki. Mr. Kalki.
Lakshmi. Okay. So read the next paragraph. Yes, Mata.
When the season is delayed for one who is family, yes, he is Kalki-yoga. But two persons should be only for sufficient family. And that is not the same. So, this Lord said that you never get old. So it means if you live for 100,000 years, average, then you won't get old.
Mm-hmm. 36,000 years means he was the king for 36,000 years. Then after that he didn't have to rule anymore, the kingdom.
No.
He could live longer, just like his father Uttanapat. So now he's just about to leave the kingdom. He's about to renounce. Like that. So he lives for 100,000 years because it's, but he doesn't spend the whole 100,000. Just like when we get to 50, then we become more serious in spiritual life. So like when they get to 50,000 years, then they say, okay, I haven't got long to go now, so
after he ruled for 36
Yeah, 36 years he ruled, not lived. Yeah, he was the king. Okay. That's it. Okay, Lorraine, can you read the next? Read the next two paragraphs.
Said that Krishnamaharaj is the great grandson of Lord Brahma. This indicates that Krishnamaharaj is one of the Satya Yuga in the beginning of creation. During one day of Lord Brahma, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, there are many Satya Yugas. According to the Vedic calculations, at the present moment, the 28th millennium is current. It can be calculated that Krishnamaharaj lived many millions of years ago. But the description of the palace of Guru Vasari is so glorious that we cannot accept that advanced civilization did not exist even 40 or 50,000 years ago. There were walls like those in the palace of Maharaj Uttanagada, even very recently during the Mughal period. Anyone who has seen the Red Fort in Delhi must have marked that the walls are made of marble and were once decorated with jewels. During the British period, all these jewels were taken away and dispatched to the British Museum. The conception of worldly opulence was formerly based mainly on natural resources such as jewels, marble, silk, ivory, gold and silver. The advancement of economic development was not based on big motor cars. The advancement of human civilization depends not on industrial enterprises but on possession of natural wealth and natural food, which is all supplied by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so that we may save time for self-realization and success in the human form of body.
Thank you. So what are the points here?
So by emphasizing the advancement of civilization is not by industrialization. It is by nice food and the way people used to live. And then time for self-realization. There's more time for separation.
Now we see the civilization is going in the opposite direction, because at that time natural resources and all that was considered to be very important, but now, you know, all the modern technology and all that. Nathimakar Sriya sensing the Bhagavad Gita that, like, value of iPods and, you know, computers and all that is just reducing day by day, but the value of natural commodities is going up. Like in the years ago, potatoes used to cost thousands and now they have become so expensive. So I think Prabhupada has said that, you know, with $100,000 also people will not be able to buy a bag of rice after some years. It becomes so rare. And
So Prabhupada points out that actual advancement of human civilization depends upon the possession of natural wealth and natural food. Then you are considered wealthy, civilized, advanced. This is actual wealth. When you have natural wealth, like that, which means in the Vedic time, you were considered wealthy if you had ghee and grains. That is actual wealth. That was how you measured your wealth, and gold, and these things as well. But primarily, you had ghee and grains. And if you had ghee was as valuable as gold. You could swap as much gold as you had ghee. That's how much ghee was considered valuable in those days. Because it was used for jagya, it was used for deity worship, it was used for all auspicious things. So natural resources is considered wealth. And now what is happening, we see in this day and age, that natural resources are becoming scarcer because of mismanagement by the incompetent governments. And then, because of that, then people are seeing that those natural resources are becoming scarcer, and then there is more value placed upon them. Their prices are rising. But it's unnecessary. Because you can grow these things in a natural society, then you can grow these things at your front door. Just like it says in the Manu Samhita, Manu says that one should not live where palm trees do not grow. Which means you should live in India. Because palm trees grow there. Or if you're going to come all the way to Australia, at least live in Queensland. Because palm trees grow there. So live in places where palm trees grow. Why? Because you can grow anything there. If palm trees grow, it means you can grow anything. You see, wherever the palm trees grow, so much fruit is there. Like that. So that is the actual necessity of life. Srila Prabhupada explains this, that these days, for example in India, people will spend 1 hour plus on the train, going through Calcutta or Mumbai or Delhi or wherever, travelling across the city. 1 hour on train so you can go to work. So you can work all day to get your money, so you can go back all the way 1 hour on the train just so you can eat some food. You have to have all that endeavour just to go and eat food. Whereas you lived in a natural situation, you could just walk out your front door, spend that day cultivating the land, at the end of the day eat your food. Why do you have to travel all the way across the city just so you can eat your food? It's all artificial. It's unnecessary. And are people happier? No. Prabhupada said everyone is driving around at breakneck speeds. Which is what happened to me. And we weren't even driving fast. We were driving a camper van, and we were driving at 80 kilometers an hour, because that's as fast as that car went. We didn't even have a fast car, which goes at 100 kilometers an hour. We're going 80 kilometers an hour. See how much danger there is. Unnecessary. Back in the natural age, then you would travel around on a horse and cart, or ox and cart. How many car accidents can you have? You can't crash your car into another, going down the road. You're not going to have a crash. So people weren't dying. Just like these days, I think in India, 800 people every day die on the roads. So that's unnecessary. So Prabhupada points out in one of these purports, he says, industrialization and modern civilization tells us that we are successful because we are producing bigger and better and more expensive and faster motor cars. That is what our civilization is based upon. Which car you drive. You're considered successful according to which car you drive. And who is the most successful?
I've given up.
He's renowned. Okay. The most successful is considered the Queen of England, because she drives. She doesn't even drive it, she gets driven around. So then she's the most successful. That's the emblem of success in the material world. But where is the happiness in that lifestyle? Happiness comes from natural resources, from living in harmony with God's creation. And that's why Srila Prabhupada, Gurujan Prabhu, said to me a few years ago, he said that ISKCON has done everything else, but the one thing we've not done is successful farm communities. We only have several in our movement. This is the next phase our movement has to accomplish. We need successful farm communities. Why? Because this is the necessity now. We need to grow our own food, because food is becoming scarcer. Not that food is becoming scarcer, but it's being mismanaged, and therefore is becoming, so therefore that is actually the problem. Prabhupada said, what are the problems of life? Right? The problems of life are food and shelter. Right? If you have food, you have shelter, then what else do you need? Yeah? Just like when Prabhupada created New Vrindavan, our first farm community in 1967, and Prabhupada said we should just build simple huts. Because in India, that's what people lived in for years and years and years. Just like Srila Prabhupada was in Mumbai, in Bombay, and he was staying at one life member's house, and very opulent house. I think he was staying with Kartikeya Mahadev or someone. He was staying with a very opulent family, and many servants and big opulent house. They had many cars. Very wealthy. Then Prabhupada went from there to Mayapur, and in Mayapur he lived in the grass hut, which you can still see near the front gate in our Mayapur. And Prabhupada said, when he got there, Prabhupada said, this is natural opulence. Prabhupada said, I much prefer to live here. This is sattva guna. He said, this is brahminical life. So this is the way that devotees have to aspire to live. This is actual natural upbringing, and this will solve the problems of life. So if somehow we can go back to that type of life, then we'll be much more successful. This is what the Bhagavad Gita is pointing out. And then what is the natural result of that kind of society? You have time to become Krishna conscious. Because it doesn't take all day to tend the fields. Yeah, it only takes about 3 hours a day to tend the land. And then you have, except for when you harvest, and then at harvest time it's a lot of work to get all the fruit. But the rest of the time, it doesn't take a lot of time. And then you have time to cultivate Krishna consciousness. Hardly these days, devotees tell me all the time. Grihasthas come to me all the time, so we hardly have any time. Working so hard, starting so early in the morning, all I have time to do is finish my rounds. And my quality of my rounds are not even so good. So this is not a successful type of life. So that's why the Bhagavad Gita is teaching us what is actual human civilization. So somehow we can adjust our lives to try to live more like that, then we'll be more successful in due course of time, individually and collectively. Like that. Any points?
Yeah, Prabhuji, you said where palm tree grows.
Yeah.
Can you explain it more things?
That means where palm trees naturally grow. Just like if you get off the plane at Kolkata and then you drive towards Mayapur, you see the palm trees everywhere. So this means it is the right temperature for food to grow easily. When you go to a place where the palm trees do not grow, just like if you go towards the Himalaya, and then it's harder to grow food there. You get much less variety. Just like we went to New Zealand a month or so ago, and one of the devotees told us that in New Zealand, maximum they get is 25 varieties of vegetables. Maximum. Because there's just no possibility of growing anything else. You can't get any tropical fruit. You can't get bananas in New Zealand, or mangoes, or papaya. Nothing will grow there. Or that everything is imported from Fiji and like that, so Queensland. So. Someone else have a point?
I was listening to a lecture where Prabhupada was encouraging the use of natural sources for the farming purpose. And he stressed that, okay, you have to use ox for plowing the field. But the Western devotees, they say, no, this is too hard and you have to use the tractors and all the high BHPs to take it. Once we do this part, then we can use the ox. Then Prabhupada said, meanwhile, then the ox are not in use and it will be difficult to put them back onto the field. They said, no, we just do this part and then we can get back the ox in. And they keep building the tractors, high power, and then ultimately the ox were not doing anything. And now, ultimately, they could not get ox into the field because the situation also created that they are rendered useless in a sense.
And then Prabhupada said, if you do not work them, then you will eat them. And that's what happens now. People think, the cow gives us milk, so she's useful. When she stops giving milk, then we will eat her. Right? And the ox, he doesn't have any use, so then we'll just eat him. So that's what happens when you don't use the ox and the cow for their natural reasons. Okay. So, Jamuna Jivan, can you read the last?
Another aspect of this verse is that Dhruva Maharaj's father, Uttanapada, would very soon give up attachment for his palace and would go to the forest for self-realization. From the description of Srimad Bhagavatam, therefore, we can make a very thorough comparative study of modern civilization and the civilization of mankind in other millenniums, Satyayuga, Tretayuga, and Dwapara.
So Prabhupada is pointing out that if we have too much bhoga and aishwarya, it will be difficult to renounce as we get older. So therefore, we should not live too opulently as grihasthas. There should not be too much opulence or sense gratification. Because if you have too much opulence or too much sense gratification, then it's very difficult to renounce as you get older. Because you have too much money, and then it's harder to give it up. It's hard to live more simply when you live too opulently. It's hard to, if you have too much sense gratification, then it's hard to renounce when it becomes time to renounce. You see the older people in like the Western world, you know, they get to 50, 60, 70, they're still walking around like they're young people trying to enjoy. How can they enjoy? It's all finished now. Prabhupada says that when you get past 50, then you're in the fag end of life. Which means, he says, like, sense gratification is... he says, Injuna Swami quotes it all the time. He says that after 50, it's something like sense gratification is useless. It's Prabhupada explains that when you become 50, then sense gratification is useless because it's all downhill from there. So you're trying to enjoy and enjoy and enjoy, but your ability to enjoy is just being reduced day by day by day. So when you get to 50, then you must become very serious in Krishna consciousness, if you haven't done it already. Better if you become serious in Krishna consciousness now. But if you don't, then at least when you're 50, then that's your last chance. Okay. The king's residence was surrounded by gardens wherein there were varieties of trees brought from the heavenly planets. In those trees there were pairs of sweetly singing birds and almost mad bumblebees, which made a very relishable buzzing sound. Usha, can you read the purport?
In this sense, however, Amara Drumaha is with trees brought from the heavenly planets is very significant. The heavenly planets are known as Amara Loka. The planet is that is very much delayed. Before the people were in 14,000 years, according to the calculation of the daily board, in this past 6 months are equal to 1 year. The daily board will be the parents for months, years, and then thousands of years, according to the daily board time. And then again, after the result of the fire activity by the Jesus, they fall down to this earth. These manifestations can be collected from the Vedic literature. As the Vedic is the people, they are used for the 20 years. So, also to the trees, the souls here on the earth, there are many trees which live for 10,000 years. So what is each of the trees, particularly the planet? They must live for more than many thousand, many 10,000 of years, and sometimes expected even now. Some beautiful trees are taken from one place to another. In the first place, when the Lord Krishna went to the heavenly planet, with his wife, such a Brahma, he took the Bhagavata, a flower tree, from heaven and brought it to the air. There was a fight between two schools in the heavenly world. Then the Bhagavata is being taken from that heaven to this. Then, Parijata was granted in the parents of Lord Krishna, which was occupied by Prince Satyabhama. The flower and fruit trees in the heavenly planet are superior, for they are very fragrant and tasteful. And it appears that in the parents of Maharaja Uttanpada there were many varieties of such trees.
So the result of living piously is that you will enjoy natural opulence. That is the result of piety. Those who are pious, they naturally enjoy the natural opulences of God. But when people become less and less pious and they become more sinful, then they do not try to enjoy what is naturally given by God, but rather they try to enjoy that which is created by asuras. So we see that technology and industrialization and mechanical advancement, these are all Asuric sciences, Asuric arts. Because you read in the Srimad Bhagavatam that when the devatas, when they fly around, what do they fly in? Yeah, primarily Pushpa Vimana. Or they fly on swans, or on the backs of bulls, or peacocks, or rats, or, you know, they fly, they go on natural things like that. And how do they operate the Pushpa Vimana, the flower aeroplanes? It is operated by mantra. There's no technology involved like that. There's no fuel emissions or noise pollution or any of these things. But when the demons, when they fly around, then they use mechanical devices. When the asuras from the subterranean heavenly planets, they use mechanical things. Just like we have a phenomenon sometimes on Earth called UFOs, unidentified flying objects. This is very common in some places in the world, such as Mexico and Peru. Very common. So common in Peru that if you drive into the Andes, the mountain ranges in Peru, sometimes you come to a crossroads, like you're going through the hills, then you come to like a where the roads cross, and it says stop, you know, like we have stop signs, and there'll be a sign on the side of the road, say, give way to UFOs. Because apparently it's so common up there. Practically everyone up there has seen them. They're already always up there, flying around. Like that. And in Mexico recently, it was only, I think in 2007, there was a UFO over Mexico City, and about 13 different people just captured this UFO on film with their like video cam, just with their, like many people, or with their mobile phones. So it's very, so it's common, these things. So this is the Asuras flying around in their UFOs, and they have like they, you know, their strange bodies like that because they're Asuric, not exactly the subterranean heavenly planets, but it's like a different species, like that humanoid type species. They have this strange looking like that. So this is what happens when you do not live piously. When you live sinfully, then you try to get enjoyment through man's creation. But when you live piously, then you just take pleasure from God's creation. More simple things. Just like during the week I was watching a video of Prabhupada Bhaktivedanta Manor in 1973 when we first got the got the Bhaktivedanta Manor from George Harrison, and Prabhupada would come out every afternoon. He stayed there for about a month in 1973. He'd come out every afternoon to sit in the garden. And you see that famous photo where we always worship with Prabhupada in the temple. Prabhupada sitting on the grass with the rose in front of him. He would just come out in the afternoon and sit there for 1 or 2 hours, just in the garden. Because it's natural. Just enjoying nature. That is natural opulence. And it's funny, I was watching the video, and one reporter came to Bhaktivedanta Manor to interview Prabhupada. And he said to Prabhupada, he's speaking about the members of ISKCON, he said, do you work? And Prabhupada said, why should we work? And the reporter said, well, you know, everyone should work like that. And Prabhupada said, he pointed to Bhaktivedanta Manor, and he said, how much do you think this building costs? And this was back then in 1973. Now it's probably worth, you know, 20 million pounds or something. Back in 1973, and the reporter said, you know, £500,000, which back then was big money. Prabhupada said, how much do you think this building costs? He said, £500,000. He said, so why should we work? He said, we serve Krishna, we serve God, and he gives us, you know, 500,000 building, we don't even work. So he said, why should we work? We just serve God, and he gives us like that. And then he said to the reporter, he said, in this lifetime, he said, you will work your entire life. And the reporter said, yes. And he said, will you ever be able to afford a building like this? And he said, no. He said, I'll work my whole life, I'll never be able to buy a building like this. He said, so? Why should you work? So serve God, and then you'll get a building like that. Just like I became a brahmachari when I joined the temple, and, you know, I lived in the ashram just here for 8 years, and, you know, I lived in the most opulent place in Melbourne. You know, this, have a look at this building where we live here, Prabhupada House, the oldest building in South Melbourne, 150 years old. Right? You walk into the temple, into Radha Vallabha's Mandir, most beautiful room in Melbourne, practically speaking. So then, if you are God's servant, you get to enjoy everything which God enjoys. We eat the same food that God eats. Every day, you know, I was living in the temple, every day I just go up for breakfast after morning program, and we get everything that God ate, then we get to eat the same thing. That's natural opulence. If you serve God, you will get everything God gives. You get to live in His home, you get to, like that. Even Prabhupada said that when the deity's clothes become old, then Prabhupada said you can give them to the children, and the children can wear them. Like that. So we get to wear what God wears, we get to eat what God eats, we get to live in the most opulent building like God is, Bhaktivedanta Manor or Melbourne Mahaprabhu Mandir, like that. So we get all these facilities just by serving Krishna. So this is natural opulence. And this is how pious people enjoy. But sinful people, they try to enjoy glass buildings and steel buildings and all these things. But you will not get peace of mind from this. Okay. When after concentration, up to 65, or where are we up to? 64. Okay. There were emerald staircases which led to lakes full of variously coloured lotus flowers and lilies, and swans, karandavas, chakravakas, cranes, and similar other valuable birds were visible in those lakes. Sri Devi, can you read that one?
It appears that not only was the palace surrounded by compounds and gardens with varieties of trees, but there were small man-made lakes also, where the water was full of many colored lotus flowers and lilies. And to get down to the lake, there were staircases made of valuable jewels, such as emeralds. But the beautifully positioned garden houses, there are many luxuriant birds, such as swans, chakravakas, karandavas, and cranes. These birds generally do not live in simple places like crows do. The atmosphere of the city was very healthy and beautiful. It can quickly be imagined from this section.
So Srila Prabhupada, when he stayed here in Melbourne, most days, because Prabhupada would always go for a morning walk before 7 o'clock, like 6 or 7. So most days he would go to the botanical gardens. And Prabhupada said, these are the best botanical gardens in the world. And actually they are one of the best botanical gardens in the world. So Prabhupada says in other places in the Bhagavatam that parks and these natural places within a city, they refresh the mind. That is the quality of God's creation. And when you walk around in what Krishna created, it naturally refreshes your mind. You feel peaceful, you feel refreshed. That's why Prabhupada would go for his morning walks in these nice places, like that, like the parks and so forth. So it naturally refreshes your mind. So, even in Vedic times, even the cities were so wonderfully designed and opulent and decorated with natural resources like jewels and that it naturally was pleasing to the mind. Just to walk around the palaces in the capital of Maharaja Uttanapad, one would naturally feel this is wonderful. One would naturally feel happy. And one's mind would be invigorated just by walking around like that. So that is the difference. Prabhupada, so you can see how much things have deteriorated. Just like if you go to New York City, most famous city in the world, and you walk down Wall Street, how do you feel? You don't feel invigorated. You don't feel, oh, this is so nice, this is so peaceful, this is so, you know, wonderful, you know, my mind just feels so shanti, you know, like that. What do you feel? You walk down Wall Street, you feel like I need to get more in the mode of passion. Because if I don't get more in the mode of passion, I will not get successful. Because everyone in Wall Street, that is their mode. They're in the mode of passion, and they just want to accumulate more materially. But when you live in nature, then you'll become more relaxed, less materially motivated. Just like my brother, he went for a holiday in Tasmania a few years ago, and my uncle has a farm in the forest in Tasmania, similar to our farm. And he stayed there with him for 3 weeks, and then when he came back, he said, "It's very hard for me to get back into work." Because you lose like your passionate drive. Because actually humans are not supposed to live like this. We're not supposed to be like passionately working all the time. We're supposed to live a natural life, where we just work enough to keep our body and soul together, and the excess time we use for cultivating Krishna consciousness, self-realization. So this is the defect of modern society. Everyone's just pushing people to work more and more and more. Just like I hear from the devotees how much people, what their hours are in India, how long people work for. 12-hour days. It's ridiculous. 12-hour days means you start at 8 in the morning, you finish 8 at night. That's not human. How can anyone be peaceful or happy? Okay. The saintly king, Uttanapad, hearing of the glorious deeds of Dhruva Maharaj and personally seeing how influential and great he was, felt very satisfied. For Dhruva's activities were wonderful to the supreme degree. So Prabhupada discusses in the purport, what is the principal qualification of a leader? What is the primary qualification of a leader? Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he cares for the welfare of his citizens. Yeah, which means he is completely selfless. That's what true leadership. That is the most important quality of true leadership. Actual leadership, because all of us are leaders. All of us are cultivating other devotees. Just like each one of us has to take care of other devotees. Because when you stay around even 1 year, 2 years, then there's new devotees are coming. So then it's you become their leader. That is your responsibility to look after them. So what is the most important quality of any devotee, of any leader? He must be selfless. You must look after the needs of others, whatever their needs are. This is the actual principal qualification. One must become a selfless servant of everyone else. So this is the way that ISKCON will expand. When each one of us becomes selfless in looking after others. Our service is to facilitate the advancement of other devotees. You don't even have to worry about your spiritual advancement so much. That will happen automatically if you facilitate other devotees' spiritual advancement. Right? Just like you can read Srimad Bhagavatam. Sit in your home and read Srimad Bhagavatam. Or you can organize a class and you can bring devotees together and then you can discuss Srimad Bhagavatam with other devotees and assist them to understand Srimad Bhagavatam more. So which is better? Right? So by becoming selfless and becoming a selfless servant of the other devotees and facilitating their advancement in Krishna consciousness, automatically you advance. You don't have to make extraneous endeavor. You can say, well, I'll stay home and I will study and study and study and I will become advanced. But how advanced will you become? Most of our advancement takes place by Krishna's mercy. When Krishna is happy with us. Prabhupada explains this. Krishna says in the Gita, Teshan, Satata, Yuktanam, Bhajatam, Priti, Purvakam. When you are serving me, right? Dadami buddhi yogam tam. Yenamam upayanti te. It means I will give you realizations within the heart. I was watching the video of Prabhupada last week, and Prabhupada said, he explained that everything will be revealed. One devotee said to Prabhupada, what happens if I have a question and there are no senior devotees around? And I cannot understand. I'm reading the Bhagavatam and I have a question and there are no senior devotees around. because I'm preaching in some place where there's not many other devotees. And Prabhupada said, everything will be revealed in your heart if you are sincere in your service and in your chanting of Hare Krishna. Everything will be revealed. Right? And that's our factual experience. Right? That we simply serve Krishna and we simply try to improve the quality of our chanting. And what is the natural result? Krishna begins to allow us to realize things. Right? And it's by Krishna's mercy. Just like Burujan Prabhu, he said, if you really want to learn something, you have to teach it. Right? Then you will learn it. Because when you teach it, what happens? You attract Krishna's mercy. Krishna says at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, no one is more dear to me than one who teaches this science to the devotees. So when you teach what is in the Srimad Bhagavatam, then Krishna is attracted. He sees your endeavor and then he gives you realizations within the heart. Things that you cannot realize by your own ability. Krishna reveals them to you. Everything becomes understood. So this is our process. Our process is to take the responsibility of assisting others to become Krishna conscious.
Goshtanandi.
Yeah, Goshtanandi.
Not
Bhajanandi. Not Bhajanandi. Become a Goshtanandi. Yeah. And then Prabhupada points out that if the leaders of society are Krishna conscious, then the spiritual and material needs of the citizens will be taken care of. So if the leaders are Krishna conscious, then everyone else will become satisfied under them. Just like you see, like in our temple, we have very nice leadership. Aniruddha Prabhu, Chincharupa Mataji, and other nice devotees. So we have nice leadership. And then what is the result? Everyone under them, their lives also become auspicious. If we don't have nice leadership, then those who follow, their lives will not become auspicious also. But if we follow those leaders who are auspicious and qualified, then automatically our lives also become auspicious. And that's why Prabhupada wanted to preach to the leaders of society. Because if we convince the leaders, then they can make more people become Krishna conscious. I had a point, but I forgot it. I was about to say something, I forgot. That's a good thing about having concussions sometimes. I forget things. Any points? Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami, he was becoming so powerful in his preaching, he was on his way to Mauritius, and he was going to have a program in which the entire, like the Prime Minister was coming in the country. It's like us having a program and Kevin Rudd coming in like that. And he was becoming so influential that when he arrived, he flew all the way to Mauritius to have a program from South Africa. When he arrived there, they wouldn't let him in the country. Because they were understanding this person is becoming a threat to the world, to our country. Prabhupada actually said one time, he said, Mauritius will become the first Krishna conscious country in the world. I think he also said one time New Zealand will as well. So now it's a race between Govinda Maharaj, who's the GBC of Mauritius, and David Maritaswamy, who's the preaching in New Zealand, who will make their country Krishna conscious first. So if we preach to the leaders, then there'll be great influence to the rest. So we should always try to convince, if we have an opportunity to convince someone who is a leader, then if they become a devotee, then automatically so many people will follow. Just like George Harrison became a devotee. And I've met so many people over the years who came in contact with Krishna consciousness through George Harrison. Harry, son of Harry. Like that. So auspicious. 1977, Prabhupada took off his ring and said, give this to George Harrison, just before he left his world. Because he did so much service for Prabhupada. Okay. And when he left this world, Mukunda Maharaj and the other devotees were around him chanting Hare Krishna. Okay. So, if we can convince any prominent person to become a devotee, they will affect so many others also. How will the masses become?
Mauritius. You said Mauritius.
Yeah, Mauritius, yeah.
So if he was not allowed there, then how did the people got so advanced?
How did they what?
The people there got so advanced in Krishna consciousness.
They're becoming advanced. There's a lot of preaching going on there. But then, yeah, no, there are devotees there. But Bhaktisiddhanta Swami was coming one time. He was coming, but he was going to do a big program. I think there were thousands of people going to come, and the prime minister, everything was going to come. They stopped him from going into the country because people were getting worried because he was started to take over the country. Yeah.
He didn't go.
He got there. He flew to Mauritius. He arrived in the airport, and they said, "You can't come in the country."
So he
had to get back on the plane and go back to South Africa. Because Prabhupada says, when the preaching becomes more significant, then the demons become more significant.
Yeah.
There's more opposition. Just like you read in Jajumna Swami's diaries. You know, the bigger the preaching becomes, then the more opposition becomes. Okay. When, after concentration, King Uttanapad saw that Dhruva Maharaj was suitably mature to take charge of the kingdom, and that his ministers were agreeable, and the citizens were also very fond of him, he enthroned Dhruva as emperor of this planet. So, Prabhupada explains that the best type of government is
monarchy.
Monarchy means one king, one ruler. That is the best type of government, and it's natural. People like it. Even I've seen videos 50 years ago when Queen Elizabeth came to Sydney on her royal yacht, there were thousands of people would lie in the streets. Because people, naturally, they like to have a monarch. They naturally like to have a king. It is natural for people to follow this system. But the problem, the reason it's been rejected all around the world now is because they don't do anything. Prabhupada said that Prince Charles and his father are hippies. He said, what do they do? What does Prince Charles do? What does his father do? They're just hippies. They just go from one convention to another, you know, one dinner to the next one, to the next one. They don't actually do anything. You know, where's the sword? You know, they get out on the battlefield and actually do something, protect the citizens, speak, you know, like that. So this kind of leadership is not inspiring, and that's why people reject the monarchy these days. And then they say, okay, now we have democracy. Yeah. But this is not the best type of leadership. People actually want an inspiring leader. That is superior. So, the best type of leadership which is there is the monarchy. But it is not that the monarch is a total autocrat. It is not that he is not subordinate to anyone else. In the Vedic system, the king is subordinate to the brahmanas. So he takes counsel from the brahmanas, and under their guidance, he runs the government. And that is the perfect system. So Prabhupada actually explained that ISKCON, he said, we don't want to run the government, we just want to advise them. As the brahmanas, we will say, this is what you should do. You run it, but you should do it like this. So read the final verse.
Also he's telling about Rajarshi. Stand by the Rajarshi.
Yeah, Rajarshi. Yeah. Yeah, which means he's a saintly king, qualified king. Just like now, we have the most popular politician in modern history. what's his name? Barack Obama. You know, it's the first person I can think of in my life, you know, nearly 40, first politician I can think of that people actually like. You know, I can't even think of a politician which people really liked for, you know, for years and years and years and years and years. But they actually like this guy. And why? Because the guy is very God conscious. Very God conscious. Like that. He's very strict. You see the guy has integrity, he has morality, he has connection with God. So he's getting power, he's getting potency, and he's actually doing some good. Unfortunately, he's not fully qualified. But he's doing some good. He's doing some bad as well. He doesn't realize it because of ignorance. But someone like that, pious, this is what Bhaktivedanta Swami used to point out. A pious person can very easily be made to be Krishna conscious. So we should look for pious people, and we should just purify them and just preach to them, and just they can very easily become Krishna conscious. Like that. Just like Prabhupada said when I was watching these videos in Prabhupada was in England, in London, at Bhaktivedanta Manor, and the devotees said, should we preach to the Indians? And Prabhupada said, they are already Krishna conscious. He said, preach to the local people, the British people, and make them Krishna conscious. Like that. Because the you see, Indian people, it's very easy for them to take to Krishna consciousness. Because the piety is already there. It's easy to transform them. So we should also try to transform the Westerners. Like that is more difficult. Okay, the final verse. After considering his advanced age and deliberating on the welfare of his spiritual self, King Uttanapad detached himself from worldly affairs and entered the forest. So it's a very wonderful purport. If you only read one purport in this section, read this purport. Because this purport is very important. Srila Prabhupada points out that when one gets to the age of 50, one must simplify one's existence, right? And focus on one's Krishna consciousness. Right? Up until 50, then you know you may or may not be distracted by family life. But when you get to 50, everything should become simple, and now you just focus on your Krishna consciousness. Right? 50 means you look in the mirror, and you're not so young anymore. What does that mean? That's Krishna trying to tell you, Hare Baba, you are going to die soon. So get serious. You don't have long to go. So if you're not already serious, you should be serious now, but if you're not already, when you get to 50, then time to become serious. Time to stop dying in your hair.
It's important for what you
said. To die there?
Yeah, I know.
This means you are a Brahmana.
Whether I'm a Brahmana, that I do not know, but I do die in my head.
No, because that boy came, the boy was the son of a prostitute, and he came to his guru's ashram, and he said, I want to join the ashram, I want to become a guru kuli. And the guru said, who is your father? And he said, I do not know. I'm the son of a prostitute. He said, this means you are a brahmana. Because you did not lie. Otherwise people would have tried to have covered it. So this means you are a brahmana.
Very
good. Very good.
So who was this? Who was this?
Shekhar. who was the bro? No, the boy was the. No, he was the son of a prostitute. I don't know. I think Shekhar. I'm not sure. I can't remember the story. So. Like that. Take this one. So Prabhupada points out at the end of the purport, he says that the main purpose of human life is tapasya. That is the purpose of human life. It is not sense gratification, as modern society thinks it is. It is actually tapasya. Tapodivyam. Right? It is transcendental austerity for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the purpose of our life. To sacrifice for the pleasure of Krishna. That is the point of our life. Right? So you become purified by tapasya, by sacrificing for Krishna's pleasure. Now, Prabhupada, listen to the end of this purport. Right? If you understand what Prabhupada says at the end of this purport, your life will become perfect. Okay? Prabhupada says, in modern days, however, it is not possible to give up one's home and go to the forest and practice austerity. But if people of all ages would take shelter of the Krishna consciousness movement and practice the simple austerities of no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, and no meat eating, and chant the Hare Krishna mantra regularly 16 rounds, by this practical method, it would be a very easy task to get salvation from this material world. So he has made it all easy. Right? He has said it here, and he says it again and again in his books. This is all the austerity you have to do in Kali Yuga. That's all you have to do. Chant 16 rounds attentively every day, right? And follow the four regulative principles, and Prabhupada will take care of the rest. Even I saw on the video, when I was watching during the week, in 1973, Prabhupada flew to Los Angeles, and one of the sannyasis had become, his sannyasi disciples, had become attached to a woman. And then, on the video you see, Prabhupada, he initiates her, right, this woman that he'd become attached to, gives her initiation, and then he marries them. Right? And all the other devotees are around, you know, in the temple room, the temple's packed with devotees, and everyone's just amazed. There's no one in history who has done this. Right? It says in the Bhagavad Gita that if you're a sannyasi and you give up the sannyasa ashram, it is like eating your own vomit to associate with a woman again. Right? So then one of the devotees said to Prabhupada after the yajna, they said to Prabhupada, Chota Haridas was rejected by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for just looking at a woman. Prabhupada said, anyway, the Supreme Personality of Godhead can reject anyone he likes, but I am his servant, and my duty is just to engage everyone in his service. It's supreme mercy. There's no one more merciful.
Most merciful.
Most merciful. And he has made it so simple. The whole thing is so simple now. Right? Human life is meant for austerity. Prabhupada said, this is your austerity. Right? It's nothing. Right? And what will he do? He'll take us back to the spiritual world in return for nothing. Right? So we should give our lives to Krishna. Give our lives to Prabhupada's service, and then everything will be taken care of. Okay, so tomorrow night we'll begin chapter 10, and at the end of chapter 11 we will have an exam. Like that. If I can write one. I don't know, but I think it will come. And Bala Prabhu's father's birthday today? Okay. So today is Bala Prabhu's father's birthday. Please give him your blessings. Okay. And pray for his advancement in Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.